dał. A co nie wiem, do pronunciation do.
Do.
Do without a U in terms of pronunciation. Thank you so much. Good afternoon, sir. And good almost evening. Good evening, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for availing yourself. And once more, would like just to apologize again for the delay. I hope you will find it comfort in terms of our apology. That is not our own making. You are most welcome, and thank you so much for availing yourself and being patient with us and present our today. How we are going to conduct our interview or our engagement with you, they provided you with a writing pad, which when my honorable members ask questions, if there's anything that would love them to repeat, they are eager, most eager to repeat for yourself, so that also you give the comfortable the responses from your side. Secondly, they will organize some water for you. You might need water. They will bring it. The other one is that we are not going to be asking you to give us a summary of your CV as it may. We have gone through your CV. As the honorable members will be engaging with you, they will also make reference to the CV. honorable members, when they ask questions, they will also request them that they also introduce themselves individually.
Okay.
And my name, I'm Mainale Soma, the acting chairperson of this process. Thank you so much. Honorable Fernando.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening. My name is Wilmanya Drucken, and voicing for me is my sign language interpreter, Trudy Tennyson. I've got two simple questions. Can you explain your understanding of the values and principles within Section 195 of the Constitution? And can you name a few and elaborate on those few? And then my second question is, what is your understanding of the functions of the Public Service Commission? Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honourable Member. Over to you, sir.
Acting Chairperson, I was still writing the first one. It was to explain the values and principles that contained in Section 195 of the Constitution and give a few examples. And I'm not sure I lost the last part of the question.
The functions of the Public Service Commission, what is your understanding? Can you explain what the functions are?
Thank you. The values and principles that relate to the Public Service Commission are found in Section 195 of the Constitution. Some of the values include the promotion of professional ethics. They include the efficient and effective use of resources. They include the fact that the public service or administration has to be developmental in nature. There are quite a number. I'm forgetting some of them. But the gist of the values are about how the public administration, which then governs all spheres of government, whether it's local, provincial, and national, have to be followed. That's as far as the values that and the principles that are in the Constitution are concerned. As far as the functions of the Public Service Commission are concerned, there are quite a number. The first one relates to the promotion of professional ethics in the public service. They also speak to the issue of giving directions relating to what I can term labor matters, for example. they also relate to the issue of dealing with grievances by officials in the public service. They also relate to investigations, and these investigations can relate to different things, for example, like your the issue of appointment, dismissal processes in the public service, for example. They can also give advice on certain matters that are specified. They can also conduct inspections in organs of state that provide public services.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honorable
Ndlovu.
Honorable
Mavis. Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Ndlovu.
Afternoon.
Although in Zulu I can say Mr. Ndlovu, because it's one of the same things, I'm correct.
You're correct.
No, I just want to know from you one question. What should be done to, or what can be the best strategies for the PSC to ensure that governance department appoint competent and dedicated public servants in senior positions? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Over to you, sir, when you're ready.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Your question, if I understood it, you wanted to know what, in my view, are the strategies that can be employed by the Public Service Commission to ensure that government departments appoint dedicated and competent public servants in the public service. For me, Honourable Member, I think the first part would be the issue of making sure that all such appointments follow the right processes and that the processes are competitive, for example. I know, for example, that the Public Service Act does allow for appointment without following the right processes for a certain expedient reason. But for me, if you are looking for the right kind of people, you would need to make sure, one, that all the processes are followed properly. You would also make sure that perhaps in terms of competitiveness, regarding the career pathing that you've got in the civil service, you can then attract the right people. Because for me, from where I'm sitting, I think it might be a bit difficult, for example, to attract, you know, the most competent public service, especially servants, especially at high level, if you cannot compete with the private sector. That would be the one aspect. I think for me, the other aspect would be perhaps where, especially in your positions like your HODs, you as the PSC would try to maintain a path where, for example, the appointment and duration of appointment of an HOD is not married to a political head. I mean, if you look at, it, for example, the UK, I know, for example, that your appointees who are equivalent to your HODs are linked to the term of the political head. So for me, those are some of the things that you might need to look at as the PSC, if you want to make sure that you put the right appointees at that level. Thank you.
Thank you,
Sir. Honorable Chris Hazen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Ndo, the National Development Plan speaks of the developmental state. Now, it seems to be one of the aspects that we're struggling with, and that seems the public service is not achieving the goals that have been set in the development plan. Now, what in your mind are the challenges that hinder public administration in South Africa from achieving this goal of a developmental state? And what do you believe can the Public Service Commission do to support that transformation in the public service?
Thank you, Honorable Member. From where I'm sitting, Honorable Members, I think for me, one of the factors that actually hinders the achievement of a developmental state is, one, the issue of corruption. For a person such as myself who has worked in the Public Protector's Office, you get to come to know about instances, for example, where funds which are meant for development get diverted in corruption, for example. And from where I'm sitting as well, sometimes even the service, for example, that is supposed to be rendered is not rendered. So for me, I think that is one of the aspects where there is a discrepancy between what is supposed to go to development and what ends up actually going there. I think as far as the Public Service Commission is concerned, as to what they can do in this instance, when I was looking at their documentation, I saw, for example, that although they've got quite a number of mandates, some of which are in terms of legislation, there are others which are by cabinet resolution and so on. But the one mandate that is very clear in terms of the legislation is the one that relates to corruption. And corruption can be at all levels of government. But what I have not seen, perhaps it's because I do not have to link with the PS, I mean, process. Thank you. With the PSC, but for me, I've struggled as I went through some of their documentation to see the kind of impact that the PSC sorry, has on corruption. I know they administer the National Anti-Corruption Hotline, but the investigation still gets conducted within the department itself. I know I saw in their 2014-15 annual report that they are saying they are beginning to conduct some of these investigations themselves. But for me, as a citizen of the country, I struggle to see the impact that they have done. And until such time as the PSC can begin to have an impact that is demonstrable, not just to full in government, but to all citizens of the country, I do not see them making an impact in terms of our achievement of our developmental goals.
Thank you, Sir. Honorable Samuel.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good evening.
Good evening.
My name is Nkulewa Hlengwane, I'm of this committee. In the final analysis, the PSC, after an investigation, so on, as you are probably most aware, have a report with recommendations and so on. But one of the things which comes up most often than not now is that the recommendations by the PSC are partially implemented. And so in your own assessment, all of you, what are the causes or the gaps that result in departments not implementing these recommendations? But most importantly then, what corrective action can be instituted to ensure or to avert the situation of the non-implementation of these recommendations of the PSC, which speak to quite a large number of resources that have been invested in investigation to improve. And so if you could unpack for us in particular your own diagnosis or the problem and how we can deal with the situation in a constructive way.
Thank you, Honourable Dom.
Thank you, Acting Chairperson. For me, I know what, if I were a member of the PSC, I would be saying. The reason is that our recommendations are not binding, or we have no way of enforcing our recommendations. But for me, I think an investigation should be able to convince whoever the respondent is. So your findings and your recommendations should be able to convince me as the respondent to say this is the kind of recommendation that I can implement. Sometimes there might be resistance because of the culture of how things are done in a department and so on, or an organ of state, let me not just say department, or an organ of state. I can give an example. Look, if you look across the institutions supporting democracy, most of them only have recommendation powers. But I don't think it's necessarily correct to marry the implementation to whether the recommendations are enforceable or not. If you look at our own office, the Public Protector's Office, before the Constitutional Court decision, we did quite well. If you compare the Human Rights Commission, for example, which can make their recommendations a court order, and you look at their impact, I mean, it's debatable whether even with that kind of setup, their recommendations are always implemented and so on. And the other thing that most people seem to miss is that once you make your recommendations enforceable, the flip side of the coin is that you get a lot of reviews. That's another way of resistance. So for me, there are two approaches to this. One, you conduct proper investigations. You take along the organ of state that you're investigating to say, this is the solution. Do you think it's implementable? That way you are able to get buy-in from whoever you've investigated. I have not been able to see an assessment by the PSC, for example, of the number of recommendations that are not implemented. I have looked at their documentation. I haven't seen that. I looked at their annual report. I could not pick up on that issue. And for me, the other aspect, I would have thought that if then you've made an assessment of the number of recommendations that are not implemented, that's where Parliament comes in. Because you report to Parliament. Parliament should be able to assist you in calling all these organs of state that are not complying and then hold them to account. So what I'm saying in short, honorable members, for me, it's not just a matter of the recommendations not being binding, but there are other ways. For example, bringing on board the organs of state that you negotiate with, reporting the non-cooperating organs of state to parliament and so on. So there are quite a number of ways that you can follow.
Thank you very much for your response, Mr. Ndo. I just want to, in broad strokes, not going into specific, since you come from the background institution of the public protector, the Constitutional Court judgment vis-a-vis the remedial action of the public protector. There is a view generally in the country that where that Constitutional Court judgment sort of covers everyone. I want to get your interpretation of it in terms of how you think it relates to chapter 9 and 10 institution, or whether you view it exclusively just for the public protector office, or you've got a view that says no. All these institutions now receive a global packaging out of what the Constitutional Court says.
Thank you, Honourable Member. For me, it's not a global coverage. I know even in ombudsman institutions across Africa, they're saying even if the wording of our own legislative prescripts is not exactly the same as that of the public protector, we are covered. The reason I'm saying it doesn't cover everyone, it's because what the Constitutional Court said there is because of the particular wording of the Constitution, which speaks about taking appropriate remedial action, whereas in most jurisdiction, or even in other Chapter 9 institutions, as well as your Chapter 9, Chapter 10, which is the PSC, you find recommending, for example, that's what the Act says in respect of the PSC, recommending remedial action, whereas in our own Act it says take appropriate remedial action. That's where the point of departure is, as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Ndo. My name is Marvin Dux. I just have one question, a very straight question to you. The question is the same. Do you believe or think that there is political interference in the public service? Whatever your answer is, what brings you to that conclusion? Thank you.
Thank you. That's a very loaded question, Honorable Member. But I would say, to an extent, there is. Sometimes the interference is not very direct. It might be, for example, in order to please my principal, I might think the principal wants this thing to go this way, and I act in accordance with what I think the principal's sentiments are on the particular issue. But I would be lying if I say, from where I'm sitting, I honestly believe that there is no political interference.
What was that last one?
I could say you didn't catch it.
Yeah, that last one.
I said I honestly would be lying to myself if I said I did not think that there is some form of
evening, Mr. Ndebele.
Good evening.
Yeah, actually, in this committee, I've got a letter to colleagues that are going to assist me with this, and because I just want to get to some direction. I was going through your statement. Now, I'm just asking myself, look, you must excuse me, you're talking with an economist here. I don't know anything about law.
Yes.
Now, is it possible that a university can confer a BProc and an LLB at the same time before you write a board exam? That's the first question. Secondly, is it possible that you go to 1, 2, 3, 4 universities to obtain one degree, senior degree, LLM in human rights, and Pretoria you do 6 months, and Freie Universität, I'm assuming it's African, that one, you do another 6 months, but somehow, somewhere, you are also in Amsterdam, in Holland, for the same degree. Now, it doesn't make sense to me. You need to tell me what is going on there, because when I was doing the master's in economics, I would do it in one university, but after I finished my junior degree and my postgraduate degree, So that's why the confusion. You must really, that's why the learned colleagues that are going to assist me with this one, because I seem to be very lost with your qualifications. Now, I can say that you are, your current salary is 1.1 million, and you apply for a position of 1.2 million, the difference being 76,000. I wonder why, after the 17 years of experience in the Office of the Public Protector, if you can just share with us this interest that has actually driven you to move from the position of 17 years, that even given you the opportunity to act as a CEO for 4 months, and but yeah, then you find yourself wanting to move in and come to this position and apply for this position. And the position where you're in right now, it's an executive manager. It's a permanent position. Don't you think that you're talking public service, so you're talking public service, where we talk about scarce resources, don't you think that the government has invested in you in that particular sector for 17 years? And all of a sudden, you are creating a brain drainage in that sector, because even currently you are still in that position. But the last question is, I find it very weird that you are getting a merit bonus for every year, 2001, 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010. So what is it? Because a bonus, a merit bonus, is when you've done over and above the job description.
Over to you, sir.
Thank you. Your first question, Honourable Member, related to my qualifications, specifically my BProc and LLB, and whether I could do an LLB before I did my board exams. Honorable member, my BProc and LLB, I obtained both. One was from 83 to 86, and then I 1983 to 1986, that's my BProc. Then from 87 to 88, I did my LLB. After that, I entered into articles of clerkship. That's when I did my candidature for an attorney. So So there is nothing untoward in that at all.
Sorry, Chairperson. Can I just say to Ms. Bindu, I'm just reading what was written in the CD. It says 1986 to 1999 respectively, unless I don't understand the English.
Okay, because I do not have the CV with me, but respectively would mean I've put in a year and a degree. So the first year and the degree would relate to one part. So then the second year and the degree would relate to the other part. That's what it means in terms of saying respectively. That's the standard usage. And as far as my LLM, when I was lecturing at the University of the North, as it was then called, we had an arrangement between the University of Pretoria and the Free University, which is actually in Holland. It's in Amsterdam. The arrangement was that part of the degree you do 6 months in the Netherlands, and the other 6 months you do in Pretoria at Tekies University. That was an arrangement between the two universities, at the end of which then you end up with your LLM degree.
You must excuse me, I'm a very stupid person, so this is just what I mean. You are saying it's got some affiliation with the Amsterdam and the Holland, is this what I'm saying? And then, but having that agreement, having that affiliation, but the 6 months then, you have to do it in Pretoria, and the other one you have to do it?
In Holland. In Holland, honorable member. The understanding between the two universities was that they agreed on the curriculum. The first part you do in Holland, then the results would be taken into account when you came back to South Africa, and then you proceeded and continued at the Pretoria University. That was the arrangement between the two universities, honorable
member.
Chairperson,
can I read what is written on the CV? What is written?
The honorable member was too cheap in what is written.
Oh, I think if it's cheap, the learned person maybe is going to help me. You can keep your
perspective? No, it's a clarity of our own rules. Furthermore, if you say there were 6 months, my question was, why not finishing everything in Holland? Because if you went there to do your studies and masters, one would think that you'd register there, you study there, you finish, and come back country. I just want, also in Manam myself, I want to understand this gap of registering here and finishing somewhere another part.
I think Honorable Lema wants to assist, but I was going to know.
If I may, my understanding when I read this, I'm subject to correction by colleagues. Free University is in the city of Amsterdam in Holland.
Yes,
so it's one thing. And the cooperation between that university and the University of Pretoria was you do 6 months there, you do 6 months there.
Yes.
So that's how the degree was structured.
Yes.
And that's how you did it.
Yes.
I think Acha was just trying to throw light that that's how I understand it.
The candidate is saying the University of University of the North. That's how he started. I want to quote him the person. Had an affiliation with the university in the Amsterdam. Alright? And as a result, he went to do 6 months there in Amsterdam and go to Pretoria. Now the question is, where does, you know, it doesn't link, because now the agreement is between the University of the North and the Amsterdam. And
when it comes to the LLM, the South African law and the laws of the Netherlands doing the master's and finishing 6 months there, shoot, I've got a serious concern with that.
Chairperson, I'm not sure if I'm the right person to defend the agreement between two universities, to be honest. I cannot. I was just a beneficiary of an agreement. I'm sure the committee can do checks on the validity of the LLM degree and take it from there, because honestly I can't take it beyond this.
Sure. Maybe to assist the candidate and assist the committee. For the purposes of this interview, can we just agree that LLM was from the University of Pretoria?
Yes.
Because that is where the degree was conferred, and that is where the certificate is accredited. If we can just, maybe for the purposes of this meeting, omit the Holland part, because it seems to be confusing, and stick on what is in the degree, that it is conferred by the University of Pretoria.
Safe to say that honorable members were still going to do writing which we have completed to all candidates. Having said that, honorable doctor.
No, the candidate is my question.
Oh, I thought he wants to make a follow up then that comes up to you.
Sorry, follow up. I just wanted to know the contribution. The question answered.
Which was the one
on
the degree?
Into the interaction.
Okay, let me just allow him just to respond and then
all right.
Go into
that.
If you wish to.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. The last question related to why I would want to move, given that I'm almost earning the same salary that is offered here, and the fact that this position is not permanent, I think that was read into the question as well, and whether government has not invested enough in me to remain in the office of the public protector. I think, honorable members, if you look at my CV, I have been with this office since 1999. I started as a senior investigator. I became a senior manager. Now I'm an executive manager. I think in everybody's life, I mean, I'm 52. I'm not as young as I look, perhaps. But there comes a time in life where you feel that you need a new challenge. I mean, I can write a report in the public protector's office and do an investigation half asleep. For me, there is no challenge there. The issue of whether the government has not invested in me enough, my sense is that government is one entity. So whether I move to the Public Service Commission or I go to the Department of Justice, the investment is still paid. So for me, it made no difference. But the bottom line, Chairperson, is for me, I feel I need a new challenge. I've been with three public protectors, well, it's four now. I feel perhaps my contribution lies elsewhere. The merits that I obtained, what?
what is this that you did over and above? It's almost, you know, where you're so good, because that to us, it has a value. Exactly. It's a value added. What is this?
I'm having to go back quite a number of years. If I take, for example, the year 2006, when I was in Malaga, I'm just thinking back. I just want to give you a very concrete example. Even though I was running the Mpumalanga office, which is an office that I opened, I conducted an investigation with the public protector, then Advocate Mushwana, against the Commission for Gender Equality, where we interviewed all employees of the CGE, and I was the lead investigator. I was the person who also wrote the report and so on. But this is just one example that shows some of the things that I did over and above and so on.
With all the responses that you have given us, what is the, are fully aware that you are aware, you know what is the mandate and everything of the Public Service Commission, and also you have gone through their reports, the latest reports as it may. What creative value add to improve the operations of the public service that you may bring when you are fortunate to be appointed?
Of the public service and not the Public Service Commission. I just want to be clear on that.
You are doing the interviews of the Public Service Commission.
Oh, okay. Just that you said of the public service. So
okay.
I wanted to clarify on that one. Thank you, Chairperson. For me, the one aspect that I feel is a bit lacking in the PSC is in terms of their impact. If you do not go through their documents, for example, you would hardly know that they exist. For me, if I were to be appointed, I would want to see a Public Service Commission that looks at issues, for example, that have got an impact. You were referring, Chairperson, to documents that I've looked at. I've seen, for example, that one of the powers that they have is the power of inspection of service delivery centers and so on. And so far, they've only done two. And in their own opinion, the most successful for them was the one on textbooks. And they say they want to do it year after year because it was such a success. For me, that's traversing the same terrain. You're not making an impact. What I would rather see is every year you theme your inspections around a certain area. Then you make the kind of recommendations that then change the systemic issues. Because if you keep on going to the same area, it means there are a lot of other areas that you're not touching on. I think for me, whether I'm appointed or not, for me that is a serious, serious opportunity that the PSC is missing in this regard. And the other aspect, Chairperson, that you would want to see is in terms of their investigations, I hardly think that there are very many people who are deterred when they think of malfeasance by the fact that there is a PSC. That's because their investigations do not have impact. You'd want to see a PSC where when they have investigations, they've got the kind of investigations where when you name and shame a few key people, then people know that the PSC stands for this. If you do 1, 2, 3, this is what is going to happen to you. I'm talking about the investigation aspect. I know there are other areas where they've done a lot of research and they give direction and so on. But there are certain key areas where I feel that they can have more of an impact than they are currently.
Okay, thank you so much. Let me just say thank you so much for your response and time that you've given to, you have taken to respond to our questions. Do you have any comments or questions from your side, the panel?
Thank you, Chairperson. For me, just to thank you for giving me this opportunity. It's a nice learning exercise, especially at this level. So I appreciate whatever the outcome of
but from now, what is going to happen, we'll hear from the administration in terms of whether you are successful or not, or whether there's anything further that we need from your side. Other than that, all the best, and thank you so much once more.
Thank you.
Tomorrow, so that there is no silent question mark what happened to the file over the night and all these things. That's two. Three is that can we, the last minute, honorable members who are here from Verma, Honorable Mwade, Grace Dayden, Shewa, Honorable Dex, Zombela, Honorable Dubazana, and myself. We are here tomorrow to complete the project, because otherwise for selection purposes we have a difficulty if we stand without the outstanding candidates. And I would not want us also to, with all the hard work and the brains and the time that we have spent, and then we tend to not find each other when we conclude. Mascone? I'll request that all honorable members, they will take a 7 o'clock bus. Because in my discussion with the speaker, we were unable to have an agreement in terms of the shuttles for tomorrow morning. Then we'll commence o'clock, 9 o'clock, not run about 9 o'clock. Because if you take a 7 o'clock bus, we'll be here at the Dombela. At 22:09. I will request the administration that they will be noting this meeting tomorrow. All the candidates will be here on time, and also will stick to the time. But also at the end of the candidates, because also there must be a principle of uniformity in terms of also 9 o'clock. And I'll remind you, I know. But don't call me at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
I wanted to raise the question of whether 7 o'clock would be needed. 9 o'clock, of course. I remember this morning we left. I don't know if it is half past 10. And the last morning, only the holiday at 8 o'clock.
So I'm just saying,
take that into consideration.
Can we say that before we go to rest, which is a decent time, would be before 12 o'clock, that would be a decent time today, that we receive our SMSs that indicate and try to accommodate this one. Because I can't from the chair just respond now to say yes or no. But we went, but we have to be here, our home office at 9 o'clock. Mr. PMG, I can see that you are ready with your machine there. Please don't upload that.
No,
please do us a favor, but otherwise we're going to blow our process.
Okay.
Other than that, thank you so much.
Maybe go on, yeah.
Yes, and after your breakfast.
I don't know.